from the intersection of technology and public accounting.
It's technology advice and insight you can trust.
This is Tech2Go.
Tech2Go is the CPA Technology Advisor's monthly podcast program, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Greg LaFollette and regular columnist Brent Goodfellow, Dave McClure, and Randy Johnston. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Welcome to Tech2Go. This edition is brought to you by the CPA Technology Advisor. Visit cpatechadvisor.com for all the latest independent reviews, educational webcast programs, and a free productivity survey for your firm. Your host for Tech2Go is Greg LaFollette. He is the executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor, and he also serves as the senior manager of tax and technology consulting for Ide Bailey. He is an accomplished professional who holds the CPA and CITP credentials and is uniquely qualified to help firms navigate through the technology maze to find practical solutions that work. And now here's Greg to introduce you to the rest of the team on Tech2Go.
Hello, this is Greg LaFollette. Welcome to episode 2 of Tech2Go. We're happy that you're here. We're thrilled that there's been actually hundreds of you that have either tuned in, downloaded, subscribed, or some way listened to our first episode that we put up for January. And this is episode 2, the February edition of Tech2Go. I'm joined by my regular panelists and friends, Randy Johnston. Good morning, Randy. Where are you at today?
Good day. I actually am home for a change.
All right. Gotta love Kansas, right?
Indeed.
How many days did you spend at home last year, Randy?
It was actually a pretty good year. I was home almost 100.
Wow. Now, tell me what your family thinks about that. Is that if you're home too long, it starts to fade? I know that because that's the way it is at my house.
Well, let's put it this way. My wife asked me several times, aren't you about due to go back out again?
Right.
So, we enjoy the time together, but they also know that I can't do a lot of things that I'm doing unless I'm out face-to-face with people.
Exactly, and it's so much fun to see you on the road. And I actually see you, Randy, more than I probably see, you know, some of the tax partners in the firm where I office with, because they're on another floor and I never see them. But yeah. I see you at all of these places, and a lot of times we see each other like across the room and kind of wave, and that's about it. So I kind of treasure those times we actually get to sit down and, you know, maybe have dinner together or something. That's fun.
That part's good. In fact, I would guess that I saw you more times last year than I did the partners in my own organization.
Well, that's true, because you're always out doing other things. Well, Randy, it's great to have you here, and as always, and we're looking forward to digging into a bunch of things. Also with us is Dave McClure, and Dave, if I remember, last month you were bragging about your weather. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Don't want to talk about it this month. I'm sitting here in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, and we got clobbered with ice this week.
You're a little
couple
quick,
inches
man.
Of ice on top of about 6 inches of snow. So the roads are still mostly closed up here in the mountains.
Sure. Sure. So you've got no school and a 7-year-old hanging around, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Keep
Boy,
life interesting.
That's got to be fun for us old guys.
It is. But more importantly, I took advantage of the week off to bite the bullet and go ahead and transition to Windows Vista Ultimate, and also to the Office Professional 2000. So
okay.
got some interesting thoughts about those that maybe we can talk about a little later on.
That's great. That's always fun. I could probably join you, because our last panelist, Brent Goodfellow, was kind enough to put together a machine that my wife is actually using with Vista. And we've got Office 07 on it, and she's really enjoying that. And she is not a technical gal, but she'll sure use technology when it benefits her. Like, you know, the ATM, she figured that out right away. She liked that. And she's tuning up that Vista machine. Brent, good morning. Welcome.
How are you, Greg?
Great. Thanks for getting up so early. It's kind of the crack of 8 for you, and the rest of us are, you know, on Central Time and Eastern Time. You know, we're starting to think about lunch, so we appreciate you getting up early for us.
Well, breakfast with the guys. What else could be better?
How much better can life get? So your firm is in full tax season mode?
Pretty much. So I help a little bit, and most of the time just sit around and watch them work. So that
try and stay out of the way.
Try and stay out of the way.
Do you actually review tax returns?
A couple. Yeah,
right.
I still try and keep a foot in there. Just gives me an opportunity to feel the pain of the practitioners that we consult with. So.
Sure. And that's an important thing, and that's actually 100% of the reason that I choose to office with Ide Bailey, and I do review tax returns, and you know, and I sit right there, and I tell people that you know, when I speak and when I write that. You know, when I go get coffee, there's accountants in the coffee room, and when I walk through the lobby, there's clients sitting there, and I love the smell of tax returns in the spring.
Absolutely,
and it does give you a little bit different perspective. It's different than just visiting those firms.
Going to be in Seattle next week, though.
Oh, okay. What's happening there?
Well, I'm gonna be helping with the last Vista launch. Microsoft's been doing 2 months of this, and hopefully they've got it right now. So they're doing the last one in their hometown, so to speak, and I'm going up there to help with the Vista launch. So that should be kind of fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Will you? You know, hopefully, what I've understood is the gift bags are getting better and better at every launch. What do you expect you might find in your gift bag?
I don't know. They seem to be big on mouse pads and 2 gig USB hard drives. So we'll see. We'll see what comes. Although I understand there's a pretty snazzy shirt this year too.
Well, you know, you gotta love that. You know, you guys have all been on the Microsoft campus, and I assume that when you were there, your contacts have you been to the Microsoft store, the employee store?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So I've been taken there, and it's full of, you know, the Microsoft. I mean, anything that will lay still to get the Microsoft logo emblazoned on is in that store, and it's closed to the public and available only to each employee. And as I understand it, employees based on their rank are allowed to spend different amounts of money. I mean, they have to spend their own money, but. You know, depending on who they are and their rank, they get a higher allotment. Is that kind of how that works?
Yeah, and they also, depending on their rank, they can purchase Microsoft products for extended family, and the extent of that extended family is based on rank too, is what I understand.
Okay. Well, I've been taken over there obviously as a consultant. Randy, I suppose you've had that done too.
As a matter of fact, I've done that for a good number of years, and purchased a few toys there, but more fun than anything else is just watching the Microsoft employees make their purchases there.
Seeing what they're buying.
Yep.
And if you do buy anything, and they said to me, oh, no, you don't have to pay for that. I'm going, no, if I'm going to get some, I'm going to pay for it. I don't want to go down that road. But, you know, the actual employee has to pay for it.
Yes, absolutely. So since the Microsoft logo has been emblazoned on whatever would hold still, did you take a moment and get the laser burned on the arm there, or what?
Well, you know, almost. I keep saying, you know, they don't have those shirts in there for guys, you know, for guys that are 6'6", 300 pounds. They're a little short on those. So I can get away with not buying a lot of stuff. But I walk out of there with things that I don't really need but are fun to play with. You know, the last time I was there, I bought a copy of MapPoint, which, I mean, I already have and use Streets and Trips and Streets, but, you know, MapPoint is the statistical thing that sits on top of it, and it is great fun to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know really why. We're going to talk about MPAN a little bit later, and so we'll talk about, you know, why I needed to buy something to make them happy when I was there, because it is work to take you over there. Let's pop into our first topic. One of the things that that came about as we talked last time was let's all share a little bit about something that that's kind of in your toolkit. What's kind of a number one in your book that that's a hardware, a software tool that that's really cool? And I will tell all of our listeners, we have not rehearsed. Of course, we don't have time to rehearse any part of this. We barely get a list of three or four things that we're going to talk about, right, guys?
Absolutely.
So the extent of our research here or our preparation was, let's talk about some hardware software tools that make life easier. So it'll be really interesting to see how we all attack that. Dave McClure, you're sitting out there in the snow and the ice. What's a number one item in your book? What do you really love? And the rest of us will promise not to laugh.
Well, I'm actually going to give you two. I'll give you one hardware and one software. For the
okay,
hardware,
cool.
easily had an empty disk drive bay in the front of my machine, and I popped in a little card. I guess it's a drive that actually is 9 drives in one. It has additional USB ports, handles the little cards of every size, from my camera, from my cell phone, all of the additional cards, plus an SATA expansion port, 1134. It's marvelous to have the ability to handle just about any kind of storage device out of my machine. So that's hands down my favorite hardware piece.
So that's kind of a hardware Rosetta Stone.
Yeah, it is in terms of storage devices, because you know I know lots of people who have digital cameras, and they have to attach yet another goofy device through their USB ports. And I don't know if you've noticed, but USB ports are suddenly coming at a premium because everybody wants to use them.
Sure.
My machine had 4 of them built in. I'm running 6 devices now that require USB ports. So you've either got to get expansion from somewhere, or you've got to start unplugging devices or go back to the old serial ports.
You know, you're absolutely right on this USB thing. Before we move ahead, Dave, can you do you have a name and a, or maybe a website on this particular unit that you slid in there?
Actually, I don't, because I bought a generic one.
Okay.
And relatively inexpensive, just at my computer mega center. And in fact, they have lots of options available, Greg. You
sure.
can get, you know, mine's only 9 cards, but you can get them that'll read up to, you know, every kind of card available, plus 5 or 6 additional USB ports. So there's a lot of flexibility, both in price and ability. But it's a low cost addition, and I just buy the generic.
Sure, that's all. You know, that's always fun. I, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the USB ports. I earlier this morning I was preparing a blog post for the Tech Gap. That'll probably go up sometime later this week. The blog post was about USB ports popping up on desktops, and I actually put in that post 2 devices that I found that when I first saw them, I thought it was a joke, and then I realized it's not a joke. One is a USB pen holder, and the other is a USB tape dispenser. And well, what they are is simply a USB expansion unit. The tape dispenser's got 6 USB ports along the bottom side of it, but it's big and has some presence, and it also serves as your tape dispenser, so you don't have yet another device on your desk, but you know you have that additional. The same thing with the pen holder. Kind of interesting. Brent, do you have extra USB ports sitting on your desk?
Well, you know, it really depends on the age of the machine, and I tend to, you know, turn over my machines fairly quickly. The newer machines are coming with 6 USB ports, you know, built in. So And you've got room for more, which is what Dave did, you know, from the motherboard. So it kind of depends on the age of the machine and how many USB devices you're plugging into that machine.
Right. And whether or not your machine is physically located in a spot, where you want to have that. Many people still use, maybe a mini tower or something, and it's under their desk, and they really don't want to be crawling around down there.
That's right. Most of the new laptops are coming with the combo card connections that Dave's talking about. So they support SD cards and compact flash cards and that kind of thing.
Right. Right. And the Sony's even support the memory stick.
That's right.
No one else does, but they do, right? That's interesting. So, Dave, what's your software tip?
I actually have a pair of software pieces I use, and here's the reason why they're important. No matter how good your antivirus program is, no matter how good your pop-up blocker is, sooner or later the adware guys and the spyware guys get to you and clutter up your hard drive. They slow down your machine. If your machine is connected to the Internet at all, sooner or later you or someone else is going to click on something dumb. And even, I've done it. I'm willing to bet, Greg, that you've done it.
I did it
so I've got two programs. One of them is by Lavasoft, and it's called Adaware.
Right.
It's the personal free version. And the other one is SpyBot Search and Destroy. Both of these are free downloads. You can run them on a regular basis. I run them weekly. And they'll go in and root out all those adware and spyware things, tell you where they are, and then take them off your machine. I'm real big on those for anyone who's running a machine, especially if you're connected to the Internet.
I absolutely agree with a caveat that all cookies are not bad. Sometimes those get run and then people can't figure out why their username wasn't remembered on some particular site. So there is a downside.
So we got to know from Dave what he's going to do now that he's moved to Vista and Windows Defender is part of the operating system.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm real high on Vista and I'm real high on Defender, but you and I both know that there are going to be a lot of offices that are going to be slow to upgrade to Vista. And they're still going to need AdAware and SpyBot Search and Destroy for at least, until they can get upgraded. But no, you're absolutely right. I love Defender. I love the fact that they finally built what appears to be pretty decent antivirus and security defenses into the operating system. With all due respect to McAfee and Symantec, which are two companies I've really liked over the years,
It's nice to have them built in, but these other ones the AdAware and the SpyBot are great, but these other, the McAfee and Norton, I mean, those products have gotten so big and so fast that I'm just not cool with them anymore.
They interfered. I found that they were more often than not interfering with programs. Either by slowing them down or by blocking them, it just got to be almost painful.
Sure. Randy, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the Defender product is running nicely, and I have become a fan of it. Likewise, most of the traditional big vendors have built big, bulky products, and unfortunately, most of these spyware products are still not super effective. Still, that all those things said, for most of us, if we've got an overall suite that includes the spyware protection that's getting updated on a regular basis, that's still probably our best opportunity or best vantage point today. I tend to use the Computer Associate stuff because it is pretty effective,
right,
and small and quick. And, their spy protection product is sufficient but not great inside the product.
Right.
We have noticed on the machines protected by Defender that they seem to be staying a lot cleaner, and Microsoft actually wrote a very insightful white paper on this spyware protection with Defender covering the January through June window of last year, where they talked about 6 million machines being protected in that window, about 10 million attacks fended off on those 6 million machines. So, you know, a couple of attacks each. So Microsoft's trying to help us in that area. Usually the third-party vendors have done a better job than the built-in items, but I think Microsoft's making a pretty valiant effort with some of these companies that they've purchased.
Okay, okay. What you got a number one pick in your book, Randy? What's high for you?
In terms of software?
You have hardware and software.
The number one for me is pretty simplistic, Password Depot. Just released their version 3 of the product.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, what the product does is it allows you to maintain user IDs, passwords for a broad number of Internet sites or items on your networks, wherever you have to log in with the user ID and password. It can auto-generate very, very complex passwords for additional security. Frankly, I use that product every day, and I know that it saves me time, and I'm going to tell you 10 or 15 minutes every day because I go to so many different sites logging in.
Right. And that product is machine-specific, correct?
It is. And with the last version, you can actually park those passwords on a USB stick, and they are encrypted on the stick. So in terms of just giving yourself a little bit of extra protection, that's very good. And, of course, I recommend that network administrators use it so they can remember the user IDs and passwords and secure them for all their routers and servers and all
sure.
those types of things. So it's kind of a self-documenting tool along that line. And at $30 or whatever it is, it's a real bargain.
Yeah, cheap at twice the price.
Yeah, it would be a bargain at $100 or $200
exactly.
based on how much time
exactly.
it saves me. So the second one that's probably just as much of a time saver is the Second Copy product.
Yes.
Yeah, Second Copy, of course, I use religiously, and actually I don't have to do anything. Once it was installed, it copies or replicates that data from my portable laptop or from my desktops to backup NAS devices. So I use it in my office. I use it on the road. I use it at home on the road. It basically allows me to duplicate from my laptop to a USB drive. At home, it backs up my entire network to my NAS is there. And in the office, we use it actually for server replication and so forth.
Right.
So, again, a wonderful product. And, again, about $35. So both of those are sub-$50 recommendations that will save you all the time, all the money that you spend in the first day.
Sure. What about you, Brent? What did you have on your list?
Well, I use a product similar, I guess, to Password Depot. It's called eWallet. And it runs on my desktop as well as my Q Pocket PC phone, which is probably my favorite hardware device just because I'm mobile a lot. And another software device that, or I should say piece of software that I use all the time is OneNote. And I'm constantly, you know, taking notes either from my mobile device or on a number of my PCs, either the one at home or the one at the office, and those notes, you know, sync up. So I always have my most current set of notes so that I can refer to data and information.
You know, I wish I try to use OneNote and really become a religious user and really do it. And I know if I could get over that hump, you know, and get a little critical mass, I'd be a real happy user. But in all honesty, I can tell you I'm not there. Any of you other guys there with OneNote?
I've been taking notes from our call in OneNote right now.
Okay.
So, in effect, yeah, I use it pretty religiously. I was doing consulting work on Thursday, Friday. The 2007 version, I believe, is a significant move forward over the 2003 version, too.
Uh-huh.
So, clearly, this is a case where if you can get yourself to the most current version, there's additional benefits built into the product.
You know,
Greg, I'm on your side, but I have to say I'm not a big OneNote user. I just haven't seen that big a need for it in the work I do.
Right.
Yeah. Mine is so much, you know, listening to people and outlining ideas, just having it, you know, quick and searchable and those types of things, it's really paid off for me.
Yeah, you know, it's moved that around so easily.
As I listen to each of your number one picks, I'll share mine in just a second, but we all are kind of in the same area with a little bit different twist. And as I listen to many of the things that you guys had as number ones, I use this e-wallet product is actually an Ann Arbor company by the name of Ilium. I've been there and talked to the guys. Great product, and you know, when I lived in Ann Arbor, I went and visited with them and looked at some of their stuff, and they're really fun guys. I use that regularly. The second copy, I have a product, Randy, that I like, and then I'll compare it maybe a little bit, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. But I use a product that's actually out of Israel, and the product is called Be In Sync. Website, obviously, beinsync.com. And this is a product that is internet-based, if it needs to be, but it simply connects. It's a groove-like product. It allows me to synchronize folders. So I have synchronized my documents folder on my tablet, my home PC, my desktop at my home office, and my desktop in my office. So wherever I happen to work, all of my documents are always the same. And it simply synchronizes over the internet and highly secure. If I'm working on an airplane, obviously it doesn't, but as soon as I get an internet connection, it just plain synchronizes. And if I've made changes on a flight, or I'm sitting out at a client's office or at a conference, it automatically pushes those changes immediately back to those other machines. And so I like the idea of, number one, having everything backed up nine ways to sundown, because my home machine is actually backed up to a Mac store. And my office machine is backed up to a server, so I've got multiple copies. And so I really like this Be In Sync thing. And, you know, it also allows me to access that from another machine via the internet, I can actually just sign on to a website, basically, and get my documents if I need to. But what's going to happen is, you know, last month we talked about this, you know, as we move into the Vista world and we get this Microsoft, this home server, we won't need this anymore because it will automatically do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of an interesting product. And my other favorite product is a NAS-like device that I run at home. It's called SimpleTech, and it's a half a terabyte, and it just backs up all of my machines at home, and also serves as additional extended memory across that all the machines could see. I just plugged it into the router, and everybody could see it right away, and uses Retrospect and copies everything. So, you know, pretty slick thing. It's amazing, you know, that for under $300 you can buy a half a terabyte of NAS with Retrospect, and you know, that's pretty high end stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. I actually was looking at the NASs just in general, because obviously they're going up to 1 terabyte now for $800 or so, and getting a couple of hundred megabyte is a $70 decision now.
Right.
So pretty amazing. Really no excuse that I can see for people not to be backing up on hard drives. And in fact, I use multiple different NASs and back up and take those off-site. So I not only have the NAS in the home backing up, but that NAS is backed up to another NAS, which is off-sited. And I use internet backup as well. So
sure.
I actually have replicated backup in Atlanta and several other cities around the country and over into Sydney, Australia.
We're gonna go to that here pretty quick. I mean, we've been talking about internet-based backup for a long time, and there's a lot of people out there doing it, but they're still not priced properly. One or two of them are priced okay, but basically they're not priced properly, are they?
Many are still, I think, charging too much in that area. Yes, and of course the other concern is the security of the data. So knowing who's getting that backup of your data winds up being a pretty big concern, I think, too.
Exactly, exactly. But one of these days, somebody's going to come along and they're going to say, here's my SAS 70 review, and I'm going to start charging for backup space. Now, in their defense, they're not buying a half a gig for $300. Their style of backup is much more expensive, right?
Yep, indeed. It's typically going to be on good storage area network gear, or at least light duty commercial NAS gear.
Right, they don't buy that at Best Buy.
Not at all.
No, they buy that from the Cisco rep, and it's lots more expensive.
Yeah, in fact, I was in a CPA firm that was talking about moving their EMC SAN, and just the charge of moving the device from one location to another was $8,000 for the move.
Right. Yep. That's expensive stuff. Speaking of expensive stuff, let's talk about Microsoft for a few minutes. One of my favorite Microsoft things, this Microsoft Professional Accountants Network, is actually free. And Microsoft said the F word. You can sign up for MPAN for free, and you get some good stuff. I'm an MPAN member. Randy, are you an MPAN?
Yes, I'm in MPAN and have been for some time, and I did it primarily because I wanted to have legally licensed software for very inexpensive rates I could use across my entire network. And
you stepped up to the Action Pack, right?
That's right. So I went from the free version to the pay-for version, which,
right,
of course, we've recommended enthusiastically since it was since its inception.
So I spend, I believe, is it $300, $299 for
$299 per year.
Okay, so that and I am an Action Pack subscriber. I know you're a big fan of Action Pack. What help me understand the MPAN, Brent? You're closest to Redmond, so explain MPAN for me.
Well, MPAN is Microsoft's initiative for essentially for accountants. They look at the industry as a whole as recommenders of their software, and so they kind of developed this program similar to their registered partner program. It's fairly easy entry. As long as you can show that you're an accountant, and if you're willing to take the second step, which is to sign up for the Action Pack, in that case it requires you to write a check for $300. But frankly, the value that you get out of that $300 is just unbelievable. Just for example, you get 10 licenses for Windows Vista Business. So if you've got a small firm with under 10 machines, you can legally license every one of those desktop machines. And that's just one of the components. There's a long list that includes server products as well.
Yeah, it's literally thousands and thousands of dollars. I think there's also 10 copies of Office 07 in there.
Is there 10 copies of Office 07?
Maybe it's only one. No, I think it's. I think
no, it is. It is 10 copies of
yeah.
Office 07. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, it was 10 copies of Office 2003 before the 2007 rolled. And during the last 2 weeks, the delivery of Windows Vista and Office 2007 occurred, and the Vista version delivered was Vista Business, and the Office 2007 version was the enterprise version, as I recall, much higher end product.
Yes, and but the Vista product was business, so we may as well at some point here, Dave McClure will want to rant about the different versions of Vista. So why don't we, Brent? Why don't you explain what Windows Business is, and then Dave, you can rant about it.
Sure.
Well, Windows Business is a version of Vista that, in Microsoft's view, is best run in a business. It's essentially equivalent to XP Pro, so it doesn't have the ultimate extras. There is a business version that has those extras. It's called Vista Enterprise Edition, and that's probably the best comparison is XP Pro for Vista Business.
Okay, and the ultimate is the best comparison would be the
Multimedia Edition. Yeah, it's basically kind of a cross between Multimedia Edition and the Tablet Edition.
Okay.
Yeah, Vista Ultimate, essentially, there's no XP comparison to Ultimate. It essentially has every technology that is available on the desktop level.
Okay.
Media Center Edition, probably the best comparison would be what they call XP. Would be the Home Premium Edition.
Yeah, that's probably more true.
Okay. So I know you find that very frustrating in all these versions and things. David, what would you have Microsoft do?
Well, I'm not, obviously, from my book, they have too many flavors, and I think it just breeds confusion. I kind of yearn for the old days when, there were one or two versions, and they maybe you got a few capabilities that you didn't need or didn't desire. But I find that as you grow into the operating system, I took the Vista Ultimate because there may be capabilities that I don't need today that 3 months from now will be critical to how I do business. So, yeah, I'm a little confused by the plethora, especially the fact that they're selling some sort of basic starter package overseas that's not even in the U.S. and what happens when you come across those as you travel. I don't know.
Well, they had to do that, as part of their agreement with the European Union. I think we need to say here that new with Vista, you actually have the ability to change the product key. And so if you start with, let's say, a copy of Home Basic and you decide you want to go to Home Premium and have the Media Center capabilities or you want to go to Ultimate Edition, you can actually buy a different key, and you can go into the properties of the operating system that you're currently running, enter that new key, and it opens the additional features associated with the more expensive key that you purchase.
Because the DVDs are all the same.
That's right.
Okay. Well, let's get back to the, and I'm sorry I took everybody off, but let's go back to this MPAN, the Microsoft Professional Accountants Network. They're trying to create some community. They've got this registration process, and you get some stuff. One of the things is they're offering a bunch of training or support issues. Tell me a little bit about the support things that they're doing, Brent.
Well, what they're on the support side, what they're offering is what they call business critical support. So, it's an 800 number that you can call, and if you can convince the technical router that your issue is truly a business critical issue, in other words, you've got people that are sitting around and they can't work because of the problem that you're having, then you get through and you get that free support, so to speak. But it's pretty tough to get free support, and if you can't convince them that it's a business critical issue, then what you end up with is somebody taking your credit card to charge you for the support that you're getting.
Mm-hmm. But over on the CPE side, while they do, I guess, begrudgingly give you some support if you can prove that your computer's on fire or something. On the CPE side, they're doing a ton of stuff. I mean, they really want to bring the accounting community, the training standards up, and they've done that with this offer of free CPE, which is pretty attractive.
It is, and we have to make sure that everyone understands that the training is on Microsoft products. So, in other words, 24 hours of that training, it's online, or you can get a CD-ROM if you don't prefer to do it online, as well as an online lab. But that has to do with the Office Accounting Professional product.
Right.
And then there's some additional training on Microsoft Office. So, you're not going to get tax training, so to speak, here, but you are going to get technical training on accounting software and productivity software, in this case, Microsoft Office.
Well, this Microsoft Office, Office Accounting and Office Accounting Professional, Office Accounting Express, Randy, can you tell me about the differences in those things?
Yeah, there's actually a fair bit of number, but the key is that the Office Accounting Express is the new free version that Microsoft is giving away that actually has pretty usable accounting. It's downloadable. They've actually had over 1 million downloads since announcing the program.
I just blogged about this last week. A million, you know, there's about 3 million or so, arguably, QuickBooks users, and Microsoft has had 1 million downloads of this thing since October. Now, that doesn't give them, that does not equate to 1 million users, I know, but this is no slouch.
Yeah, it is really amazing that they've had that type of traffic, and that's good for them. And realistically, the Office Accounting product that is free has most of the key features that small businesses would use, with coverage in general ledger, accounts payable, accounts receivable. It also includes the eBay, PayPal, and ADP payroll integrations, as well as
Chase, credit, and the credit card thing.
And the credit monitoring
and
by
Equifax.
And the credit
monitoring thing.
And, of course, that particular version is included in the Microsoft Office 2007 Professional, Small Business, or Ultimate Suites.
Right.
So that's all good. Now, the Professional one is the upgrade version. You pay more to get multiple users and inventory and purchase order, sales order, multi-currency, fixed assets, and integration to Microsoft's point of sale. And you also, at that point, pick up some of the accountant transfer features, the accountant navigator features, and some journal entry worksheets, those types of things. So, you know, again, a lot of people, if they don't need the multi-user inventory, might be the opening way to say it, they can get by perfectly well with the free version. And, of course, Microsoft's goal is to have people upgrade to the more sophisticated version, which at that level then is trying to compete seriously with the QuickBooks folks.
Right. And the interesting thing is that's written just like we were talking a little bit earlier about the Vista versions. The difference between Express and Professional are simply the things that you see. So it is the same code base, and in fact it is the same code. And when you type in a registration number, new things appear, but they've always been there.
That is, in fact, correct. And that's the same way Intuit has actually done the Simple Start product. It
that's
is actually the whole QuickBooks
the
Pro.
Way.
So it was just a matter of putting in a code, and poof, you have the same file structures, but you get all the new features that have been sitting there all the time.
I'm not sure that is the same on the Intuit side. It was my understanding, obviously, the data stays the same.
Yes.
But it's truly a different code set, and the relationship between Simple Start and QuickBooks is actually two different pieces of code, if I understand that right.
Yeah, that could be, but
I've
been told
that
is that it's physically the same. The end-user experience is radically different, though.
Exactly. And I'm not so sure that it is that different. Well, in fact, I know it's not that different because I know both of those products. The relationship between Office Accounting Express in Office Accounting Professional is much, much tighter than the experience that a user would have going from Simple Start to QuickBooks.
That is true, because, again, the menu experiences are pretty much the same. There's just new things that appear.
Right. But, again, I mean, an accountant today can join MPAN, pony up $300 if they choose to, get the action pack, and those are really separate things. But I mean, if you're practicing public accounting, you just got to do this action pack.
Yeah, in fact, to me, if you go to Microsoft.com/CPAMPAN as the easy entry point.
Right, we'll put all of these in the show notes too.
That's right. So basically, what happens is you wind up with this ability to get software to run your practice. If you've got 20 people in the practice or 15, you've just legally licensed all the Microsoft code you need for 10 of them, so it cuts your ongoing costs significantly. Yeah, $300 a year. So I like the free program, but in my mind, it is so easy to justify the pay-for program. That's where I really would recommend most of our listeners take a look.
Yeah.
Microsoft.com/CPA-MBAN.
Right. And then move on from that and think about this this training. Brent, you're a Microsoft certified trainer. Tell me about what's your opinion of the training, the quality of the training, and the coverage of the training that an accountant's going to get here. They got 27 hours. That's a long time. Is this any good? Will it help them?
Well, it's high quality training. There's a couple of caveats. Number one, it's online, so not everybody learns well online or using a CD-ROM. A lot of people feel like they have to be in a classroom.
Sure.
So that's one thing. The second thing is that aside, the materials themselves and the flow of the training is very, very high quality, and it would have to be to pass muster with the various state boards to qualify for CPE. The $300, in my opinion, is what a lot of our listeners would probably pay for a single day of CPE, let alone all the free software and 27 hours of CPE.
Right. Right. Very, very, very interesting stuff. Well, that kind of wraps up the Microsoft and the MPAN thing. Certainly something. Now, do you before we get away from this, I want to cover one of the things. There's an awful lot of practices out there that are QuickBooks centric. Are you guys recommending and saying to these firms that they should pay attention to this? To this Microsoft accounting, or are you telling them to just stick with the horse that they rode in on?
Well, you know, in that particular case, Intuit's Pro Advisor program is still a wonderful program.
Good
and
stuff.
For all of those QuickBooks-centric people, obviously they should be in that program as well. It feels like to me that, you know, joining MPAN has the direct benefit and the paid version of having the, you know, Microsoft products. And it also gets them access to the extended support. I think they need to watch what's happening with office accounting because, let's face it, small business users that get it for free, that will be a strong marketing attempt. It will be a threat to their QuickBooks practices, and they need to at least be aware of what's going on there.
I agree. I agree 100%. It reminds me of the past days when there was another networking product called Novell NetWare, and when there was another browser called Netscape, and it seems that Microsoft sets its sights.
I remember those, Brent, and I wrote about them. I wrote about them using WordPerfect.
Right, exactly, and so I agree 100% with Randy. I think if nothing else, you know, practitioners need to be really aware of what Microsoft is doing here and their attempt to eat into the franchise that Intuit has had in this area for a long time.
You know, Nicholas Petterly, I think in his March editorial, basically said, look, I've written about things before, and he was actually speaking to the Microsoft Novell Linux licensing agreement and so forth, but he went back and talked about when Microsoft enters the market, their idea is to dominate the marketplace and not necessarily disable competitors where they'd be considered antitrust, but to hurt them badly enough that they've got control. And, you know, I've followed Nicholas for 20 years, and he's been right most of the time. And so, again, I consider office accounting a pretty direct attack on the Intuit folks. And the Intuit folks are, I think, quite capable of fighting back, and they heard the wake-up call a couple of years ago, and I think it's really improved the competitiveness and the features added into QuickBooks, and just the Intuit strategies, I think, have improved.
Well, if you look at QuickBooks 2006 and compare the things that they rolled out in that with what they had rolled out in the previous two or three versions, it was obvious that there was a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. They said, you know, because they really stepped up the, I mean, that's a wonderful, wonderful addition.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, let's move on. We do have some reader or slash, I guess, listener input, and I would point out we do have a mailbox extension, voicemail box extension set up just for listeners, for questions and comments, and we would encourage you to do so at the CPA Technology Advisor. The 800 number is 800-456-0864 in extension 2106. So if you dial 800-456-0864, extension 2106, leave us your comments and your questions. We'll insert them, play them on the air when we can, answer the questions. We did get an initial one. It was obviously an email because I didn't have that mailbox set up. So I did have an email, and it was kind of interesting. I'm going to ask our publisher from the CPA Technology Advisor, Sherry Dodgen, to read the letter, and then we can discuss it in more detail. So from our mailbox or mailbag or inbox, whatever we're going to call that, Sherry, will you help us out on this?
Sure, Greg. I'd be happy to. Roy writes in and says, Greg, I've participated in some of the webcasts that you have been involved in, and I've benefited from each one that I've been able to schedule. I presently am using a Motorola V3 as my phone and a Palm TX as my PDA. My secretary records my appointments on her desktop, and I sync using the Palm desktop from her computer to my PDA and then to my desktop computer. I have used a Palm Source Trio 650 on two occasions and have gone back again to two devices, primarily for Wi-Fi and reading ebooks. The screen, while readable, seemed just too small. I have access to Wi-Fi in my office and at home, so downloading email on these desktop computers has been very convenient. I do not spend a lot of time out of the office, and when I do, usually Wi-Fi is available. Do you know which of the platforms, either Palm or Windows Mobile, that most of our accountants are using? I like the Palm platform as it is easy to use, but I have used the Windows PDA platform also. Thanks for your input. So, Techies of the Roundtable, I'm going to turn it back over to you now to offer your sage advice to Roy.
Okay, guys. So Roy's got some interesting questions. He starts the first thing that I was kind of concerned about, or that I picked up on, is he's got kind of a bootstrap method here where he says my secretary records appointments on her desktop, and then he syncs with his Palm, and then he goes over to his desktop and syncs back. That's kind of a modern-day sneaker net thing. I like hosted Exchange, and I like Exchange. I mean, I think every accounting office ought to be running an Exchange server, not necessarily in their office. And somebody asked me at a presentation, you know, how many users you had to have to make Exchange really valuable, and I said at least one. Randy, what do you think about this thing?
Well, you know, I can tell you that my own organization, K2, we run hosted Exchange services with a vendor out of Canada called ASP1, and there is another one that we recommend very frequently called My Hosting, which I think right now is doing a great job as well. We've recommended those companies since 97, so for about 10 years.
Right. And we'll put these in the show notes. I use one called AppRiver, and I'm very, very happy with them.
Yep.
So there's a bunch of them out there.
So what happens is, literally, and I'll pick on My Hosting, for less than $30, you can basically set up a complete Exchange 2007, or you can still pick 2003, SharePoint 2007, and so forth. Monitor all your uses, have web access, put spam filtering in front and so forth, and you really get complete access with no hardware investment and no licensing initial investment. Obviously, you're paying for that as you go forward. So it's worked particularly well for us, and when the Hurricane Katrina hit our area of the world and basically took our office out of service for some weeks, we didn't skip a beat when it came to email. So there's some business continuity reasons for doing it that way.
Yep. And In terms of pricing, it was not unusual to see those guys at $25 and $30, and then there was some add-ons for virus protection. And I can tell you that that number has fallen like a rock. I'm using AppRiver. It's $12.95 per month per mailbox. No limit on size. Mine, I'm embarrassed to tell you, my mailbox is about 4 gig. No limit on size, and there's very, very good spam in front of that. So for a small, for a small office, a couple, two or three users, it could be, two, three, four users, $50 a month.
Yep. In fact, absolutely, if you were not doing exchange hosting, a lot of these guys will do 50 email accounts for $10. So,
right.
Again, you've got lots of options on that side. So do recommend, if you have not looked at hosting, for those of you who just can't seem to find somebody to set up your email correctly for exchange, what a wonderful way to get there. Even though you'd get exchange for part of the licensing with your MPAN approach,
right.
This is so much easier. Don't have to have the technical expertise in-house. Would really recommend you look at the hosting approach.
So let's make sure that the listeners understand the difference between, as you threw something in there, Randy, you said if they didn't want hosted exchange, they could get it cheaper, because then you're talking about POP3. Tell me the difference. I want to make sure that everybody understands that. Brett, chime in here, too, when it's appropriate.
Yeah, but I thought Randy was comparing getting exchange as part of the action pack versus paying on an ASP basis for hosted exchange. And I, at least what I heard was you don't have to maintain technical people to keep your exchange server up and running. That's what you're paying $12.95 a month for.
Sure.
Versus keeping it running in-house, and Randy's exactly right.
Yeah, and in fact, on the My Hosting approach, again, that's the one I happen to recommend the most. Those boys are now $6 a month for an exchange email account. A personal onesie, as you were talking about, is $2 a month. And again, now to kind of contrast the exchange versus POP3, the idea with the exchange is that you actually can have collaborative calendars, that you can have automatically synchronized capability for your email, where you can work at home or work on the office, work on
right.
the desktop at home, have a laptop or a desktop in the office, have the ability to get through the web to exchange email with Outlook web access. All of that's rolled up, and one of the more recent abilities, and probably addresses a little bit of the listener's question in this area, you can synchronize your PDA calendar automatically as well.
Right.
So I happen to be using a Palm Trio 700, and my emails and calendars synchronize to the Exchange server every hour. That's frequently enough for me, or I can do it on demand. And the same thing happens with the Windows mobile devices.
Right. So if Roy Jenkins, our listener here, were using hosted exchange, that would obviate this system where he says his secretary records appointments on her desktop and syncs them on a Palm desktop from her computer to my PDA, and then goes over and redoes the same thing to his desktop. Hosted exchange makes that whole thing go away. It's gone.
Yep.
It just happens, right?
It just happens automatically, and really, when you're having these copying steps, there's so much opportunity for error, not to mention even some of the lag times.
Sure.
So, in this particular case, even while we're speaking, I can turn around, in fact, just did, clicked into my Exchange, or into my Outlook 2007, it's already synced to my Exchange, and it's already synchronized to my phone.
Right.
So even before I could finish explaining it, it all mechanically had been done.
Exactly.
And Greg, let me step in and make a couple of comments
sure.
from maybe the tech side. It's not just a matter of the inconvenience of swapping it back and forth like Mr. Jenkins is doing. It's the fact that you can't do anything while you're on the road, if you're on the road, whereas this solution is a lot more elegant and nicer. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a pitch for a hosted exchange, because I'm one of those people who on at least two occasions for our office has tried to implement Exchange. And, you know, it's improved a lot, but I tell people small offices, small accounting offices that are seriously looking at setting up an Exchange server, I'll say bluntly, go out, open the door to your car, and slam the car door on your hand until the urge to install Exchange Server goes away, because it'll be a lot less painful in the long run. Exchange Server is still too embodied into the old network architecture, network speakies, for a person who's not terribly savvy, in my mind. It's a brutal, brutal program to try to operate and keep it up and running. And if you have a problem, then you're back into one of those silly trying to convince Microsoft that you shouldn't have to pay them hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars to get your problem solved.
EDS is not
kind of hosted Exchange is a godsend for small accounting offices.
Right. EDS is not a system that for the faint of heart. Brent, you're an Exchange guru, you know, and I respect your technical ability a lot. Is Dave right? Is this too hard for the average bear?
It's pretty difficult. I would say probably the easiest implementation of Exchange for a small enterprise would be the Exchange that comes as part of Small Business Server.
Uh-huh.
I know a lot of small firms have invested in Small Business Server. That's probably the best way to have your own Exchange server. The other thing I just wanted to mention here was, as with any outsourced type of arrangement, your security is based on the security of whoever it is you're outsourcing to. So, for example, years ago, if you happened to have your internet services provided by a certain company in Chicago who went out of business without any warning, then you found yourself without internet access for about a week while you got another company to take over. So that's
correct.
The extent of your security problem with outsourcing, and you have to weigh that against the costs and the headaches of maintaining Exchange Server in-house.
Right, but do understand, I mean, for all of our listeners now, if you're using hosted Exchange and all of a sudden you wake up one day and the company that you were using is gone and your servers are gone, your data isn't gone because you're using Exchange, RPC over HTTP. You have all of your data actually on your machine too, so you can export that, port it over to another Exchange server, and miss only the time. Now, certainly, there's a time and effort and hassle to do that, but it's not quite as bad as all of my emails are gone.
Right. No, your email wouldn't be gone, and depending on how you transfer your email, maybe your provider is actually holding email if your Exchange server, in this case, which you've outsourced the maintenance of to somebody else, is down. Maybe they're holding your email until you get that resolved, and so you're not getting current email. But
correct.
You certainly have all of your historical email on the hard disk of the machine that you were syncing with.
Right. So how do we do due diligence on these guys in the hosted Exchange world? I mean, most of the Exchange servers that I see in small firms are sitting on the floor in a closet, so there's not a whole heck of a lot of security. But how do we know? What do you tell them to do, Randy?
Well, you know, in that particular case, it's very difficult because as you try to do the due diligence across these vendors, most of what you've got is website accessibility. Occasionally, you can actually call somebody, but in many of these cases, it's actually even difficult to do that. I usually will take their place of business, what their address is, check them with the local authorities, and then if I have a contact in that market, I actually contact them for references as well. not a real good approach in terms of safety net. Then the third thing I usually do is carefully read the agreement, the service level agreement that's available, to see if in fact it satisfies my security and other issues.
Mm-hmm. If I just for my world, if when I'm looking at these guys, if I can't call them, I'm not going to do business with them.
Yep.
I mean, I know that they don't want me to call because that costs a lot of money. But it's interesting. You can almost always call them to buy something. You know, there's usually always a number for sales, and if you can't call them, that makes it a little rougher. This is kind of the old west, and you have to do your thing. But there's a couple on the real big side. Thompson is actually hosting Exchange inside their virtual office. So you can get full hosted Exchange for an accounting firm, and if you want a Class 5 data center, one of the largest in the world, there you go.
Yep, that's certainly an approach. So notice this issue of who can you trust is pretty tough. So the ones that you'll post for us, Greg, we know them to be good, and I have visited these different data centers that we're using. For me, that's actually what I do as a fourth step, but not practical for most of our listeners, is I actually go where the hosting center's at because I want to look, I want to talk to people face-to-face.
We should probably note here, too, that Microsoft itself is slowly climbing into this hosted market. We can put some links in the show notes if you want, Greg. I've got some links.
Great.
That Microsoft is they're starting to get into some of the hosted services themselves with Exchange.
You're right, because this whole Office Live piece,
yeah,
one of the things that they're trying to get to. So
that's
I'd
right.
expect them to play there in the long term.
Sure. Well, let's finish with Ray's question. He asks a lot of really, really good questions. He says, which of the platform, Palm or Windows Mobile, are most of our CPAs using? And Randy carries a Trio 700P, as do I. The only difference in ours is that I have more unanswered email in mine, because Randy's better at that than me. So we both are in the Palm world. Brent, you're in the right now in the Windows world, but you were a Trio guy for a while. Dave, where are you?
I've always been on the smartphone, the Windows side of the aisle. I was one of the first people to pick up and use, I think, a Palm, as were probably the rest of you guys. And I carried a Palm for a long time, but I'm carrying too much hardware today as is. I can't afford the luxury of two devices, and so I have to go with the best combo I can find.
Well, I only carry one device. Why would there be two?
Well, I was going back to Roy's letter where he said, you know, he's tried the integrated devices, but he finds he's gone back now to carrying two devices.
Sure.
I think what he's getting at, and what we really need to talk about in depth, is the really sad state of business class mobile phones today.
There you go.
It's atrocious. It's the worst I've ever seen it, and it seems to be getting worse instead of better.
And the very best ones out there aren't very good. And if you wanna get what's good, you have to change carriers, which is insane. So what is the best smartphone out there? What do you guys think?
I have to jump in here and agree with Dave. There's not a lot of good choices. I think the first thing that you have to do is pick the carrier that's going to work best for you. And for example, AT&T/Singular with their GMS network just doesn't work for me because I want that high speed EBDO access, and so
right.
It's down to Verizon or Sprint. And then it's a matter of which carrier is going to offer which device. And at least in this area, I've tried both Sprint and Verizon. Verizon seems to be the best, and so I went with the Motorola Q, which is a combo. It's a smartphone device that that gives me direct push for my emails and direct access to my Exchange server.
Yep, and I spend an awful lot of time out. I can't tell you how many meetings I've been in and looked across the room and seen my friend Randy Johnson over there with his Sprint Evdo card plugged in. I actually use my Trio for exactly the same system, hitting their high-speed Evdo. And you seem to like that, Randy, right?
Yeah, in fact, I've done it both ways. I am set up so I can do it on the phone, and I have used the card. And, of course, today on the high-speed card connections, it's basically a war between Sprint and Verizon, which are probably the best two, and then Singular and Altel following them.
Right.
But, you know, the advice given there is really dead on. You got to pick the carrier that serves the area that you live in the most, or if you travel a lot, the one that you believe will, you know, service the areas that you go to, and then from there, pick the device that matches.
Exactly.
So, you know, when we look at that, it's pretty clear there's still much to be done on this whole device war, if you want to think of it that way. But, you know, the leaders right now tend to be the BlackBerry Pearl and the Samsung Blackjack, the Motorola Q that you just heard about, the Trio family, whether it's the 700Ps or Ws or WXs, the Nokia E61s and 62s, and the BlackBerry 7130Cs are pretty much what you can get today that I think is the best of the best, and
right.
You know, none of those are something I'd really write home about. And of course, just this past week, we finally saw the first release of the, or at least the first announcements of the iPac phones, the iPac 500 smartphone that'll be running Mobile 6, which is right now at least scheduled sometime in June in this country, although it's been released overseas.
Sure, and I remember the first smartphone type thing I ever had was an iPac back in about 2000, I think.
Mm-hmm. But the key that I think maybe the other guys might want to speak to me has been battery life. You know, the Samsung Blackjack, which is a very nice little product, is doing well to make a day on its battery.
Sure.
I've run the Trio 700W, which is doing well to make a day on its battery, whereas my Palm version runs about a week before I have to recharge it.
Oh, I get nowhere near that with my P. I use Chattermail, and it's a little bit more high connectivity,
yes.
And I never get a full day.
Yep, that makes sense.
I carry an extra battery, and I plug that in, but I never come anywhere near a full day.
And that's probably the key is, you know, I tend to be much more of a passive as opposed to an active mail retriever. And to me, that's the difference for the people that ask me the question on these multifunction phones, what about BlackBerry versus everybody else? And,
right.
Of course, if you're mail-centric, you're going to be happier in most cases on the BlackBerry units.
Well, but, Randy, you can, I mean, my Trio, I use Chattermail on my Trio, and, I mean, it's as fast or faster than BlackBerry. If you send me an email, my phone always gets it before my desktops.
Yep, and in fact, on the Blackjack family, we know that's happening as well.
Right.
On the singular systems.
Right.
In fact.
Yeah, Go ahead.
Well, it actually arrives on the Blackjack as a delivered email message before it hits the Exchange server, which I think is pretty fascinating.
I'd have to jump in and agree with you on battery life. In fact, I won't use a smartphone unless I can get a battery, usually through a third party because the cell phone companies won't sell them to you, that's going to give me something that enables me to get a full day's use out of the phone. And, in fact, I'm using a third-party one now for my pocket PC. The truth is the cell phone with the features that you want is the one that's not coming out until later this year. And, you know, we're talking about the Trio 750 series. We're talking about the PPC 6800, which should be out any time. And, again, it's going to be a question of how many of the features have been crippled. In fact, there's a guy named Timothy Wu, a professor at Columbia, who has just proposed in a white paper and plans to petition the FCC that phone companies should be barred from turning off features like Wi-Fi in the phone, that you should be able to buy a phone that will work with U.S. cell phone carriers that has all of the features that you want that the phone is capable of. So I don't know where this is all going. I just know right now today, I believe professionals are being poorly served. And this is nothing new. As you know, Greg, I've been ranting about this for at least 12 years through the magazine.
Well, you know, and this we're right. But what we have is exactly where we were with Western Electric and the Bell system 30 years ago. You know, they control the equipment and tell you, you know, that you can't use another piece of equipment because it might infect their network or, you know, crazy stuff like that. It's just crazy talk.
I have a favorite link I'd like to give to you, and that
Super.
Is the PDA Phone Home, pdaphonehome.com.
Okay.
And it's a marvelous forum of folks who have PDA phones. All the technical stuff and all of the hacks and all of the, oh, please help me, my phone stopped doing this stuff you could ever ask for. Just one of my favorite places to go.
Okay, well, it will be in the show notes. And guys, we're a little bit out of time. We have to be respectful of our. I know there's many of our listeners who get on the treadmill to listen to us, and right now they're huffing and puffing because we've kept them there over an hour. So we have to cut them a break. Again, thank you so much, Brent and Randy and Dave. Please do, as listeners, give us a call. Again, it's 800-456-0864, extension 2106. Please call. Give us your comments and your questions, and we'll put some of them on the air. We'll handle your questions to the best of our ability. Guys, have a great month. We'll see you again in March when we post episode 3. Of Tech2Go. This has been episode 2, February 2007 of Tech2Go. Again, thank you to my guests. Goodbye, Brent. Thanks so much.
Talk to you later.
Okay, Randy, thank you again for your participation. Love having you.
Happy to be with you.
David, as always, appreciate your thoughts, and especially some of those fun links. We'll add all those to the show notes. Send me a quick note on that. We'll get them in the show notes, and this will go up in just a couple of days. Thank you so much.
That sounds good.
Goodbye,
I'll
guys.
Went off, and I'm going to go play with my satellite system now.
Super. Have a great month. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
That wraps up this edition of Tech2Go. Join the team around the table again next month for more technology advice and insight you can trust.
Tech2Go has been brought to you by the CPA Technology Advisor. Visit cpatechadvisor.com for more great podcast programs from the intersection of technology and public accounting.